For the next installment in our feature, Word of Mouth, we're joined by Tina Brown. She's the editor of The Daily Beast and Newsweek, joining us once again to talk about what she's reading. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning.
Now, you seem to be taken with places that we've been hearing about quite a bit during what's come to be known as the Arab Spring.
Yes, we have a terrific piece in Newsweek this week, which is by Asni Serstad. She's the Norwegian journalist, the war correspondent as well, who's best known for that brilliant book that she wrote about living with an Afghan family called The Bookseller of Kabul. And she offered this piece to us after having simply shown up really at the Damascus airport, because with this military crackdown, which is so brutal, it's very, very hard to get into that country right now, and there's hardly anybody left in there covering it. So she did get a visa only by showing up at the airport and saying that she was a poet, and they let her in. And she spent 2 weeks there, sort of quietly interviewing people on the ground, especially women, and writes this really gripping and chilling account of what it feels like to be an average, ordinary person living under a brutal military dictatorship, which every day is rounding people up and locking them up and electrocuting them and doing the most horrendous things to them, and they disappear without a trace.
What's interesting about this article is you feel like you're meeting people you might not have expected to meet, especially these young women who end up doing a demonstration, you know, risking their lives, but at an upscale shopping street. It sounded like it was like the Rodeo Drive of maybe
Absolutely.
Damascus.
Absolutely. Well, that's what's so kind of interesting about the piece. She goes from high to low, really. I mean, these women are figuring out moments when they can dive out onto the street without anybody watching and just put their little demonstration up because, as one of them says, you know, 1,000 people in the streets of Damascus is like 100,000 somewhere else because it's such a scary place to even risk gathering as a group.
Well, it was very brave of her to get in, and I must say most people wouldn't think of Syria as being a great travel destination right now, but the second article from the Financial Times that you've been reading actually has some destinations that are even seem more complicated and scary than Syria.
Well, what I love about this piece by Paul Theroux, who's such a great, great travel writer, maybe one of our greatest living travel writers, he's really a sort of defense of the travel book. You know, he says that, you know, in this day and age when everybody thinks that, you know, video and blogs and, you know, the internet, et cetera, have kind of displaced travel books, he disagrees. He says that there is nothing more exciting, really, than a book that can take you into a dangerous, difficult place and give you a story by someone who's really risked their lives, has gone there with imagination and found something that you never knew was there. And you know, he talks about how he says that actually there are so many places that have still not been penetrated since these earlier travels. You know, he says that not since an army veteran and farmer in Kenya, Arthur John Wavell, who describes himself as a Swahili-speaking Zanzibari, made the pilgrimage to Mecca in 1912, has any unbeliever done it since and chronicled it. And he says, now there's a challenge for a technology-smug couch potato who prates that the travel book is over.
He also gives a list, which is one of the most fun parts of the read, of places that sound good, but are actually, as by his description, really awful.
I know. I love it because we've all had romantic ideas about these places. And he writes, he gives a lovely definition. He says, Mandalay, he says, is an enormous grid of dusty streets occupied by dispirited and oppressed Burmese and policed by a military tyranny. And Tahiti, he says, which is also one of those wonderful romantic names, he said it's a mildewed island of surly colonials, exasperated French soldiers and indignant natives with overpriced hotels, one of the world's worst traffic problems and undrinkable water.
So we'll stay away from those places, won't we, on our summer vacation, huh, Tina?
That sounds like the holiday from hell, doesn't it?
Well, finally, you mixed in with these two nonfiction pieces a novel, Leaving
Yes.
Tangier.
Yes. Well, this book, you know, it was actually not a new book. It was published in 2006. And I use it as the category that actually we use in Newsweek, which is newly relevant, because this is a novel by the great Moroccan novelist Tahar Ben Djoulon. And he lives in France, and he immigrated from Morocco in 1961. But he writes incredibly evocatively about the youth of Morocco at the time and really describes, in essence, from the point of view of this character, Azel, who's a young, bright, educated youth in Tangier, what it actually feels like to be one of these disempowered, unemployed young people who we now see, of course, taking the reins and demonstrating and saying, we want our dignity, we want you out, to the despots and the repressive regimes that have been ruling them all this time. So this is extraordinarily prescient, because it's almost as if I'm reading a novel about the very people who are in those crowds in Tahrir Square or in those crowds in Tunisia. Really worth reading. A very slight book, but it's gripping. What Benjulin does is he describes the daily life of being somebody in a dead-end place like this, hanging around bars, smoking keef. And Spain, for the kids in Morocco, is this promised land. I mean, for them, getting out of Morocco. And this book is about a young man who is obsessed with getting out of Tangier, getting somewhere else, somewhere where he can have a job, where he can work, where he can support his desperately poor mother. And finally, he gets out as the taken there by a Spanish homosexual, a rich Spanish homosexual art dealer, for whom, you know, he has to pretend being, you know, homosexual. But he's doing it, you know, to help his family. And eventually his spirit is broken by the experience of exile and how much he longs for the country that he hates. You know, he was only desperate to get out of Morocco, but taken away from it. You know, whether you have roots or whether you have wings is one of the sort of central dilemmas of this book. And it's a very, very tragic insight into what it must feel like to be one of these people in stunted economies, as we're seeing in the Arab Spring, saying we're not having it anymore.
Well, Tina, it's been a pleasure talking to you again.
Thank you.
Tina Brown of The Daily Beast and Newsweek.